I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership.
Man, I'm doing great.
I've
got one question and one question only. How do you feel?
I feel good and I'm doing well.
Man, that's all that really matters. And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need an expert to help navigate the home loan process, Rocket can. Happy Trash Tuesday, everybody. We appreciate you being with us, having a good time, laughing and learning every single morning. We're here with you 6 until 10 Eastern Time, 3 until 7 Pacific. And so send us your trashes, won't you? Send us your trashes via Twitter, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS, or on the phone at 855-212-4CBS. That's 855-212-4227. Coming up in about 20 minutes from now, we'll talk about the Lakers winning the NBA Finals and LeBron's road to a fourth championship with a member of a Lakers team that won a championship as well. Spencer Haywood was on the Lakers back in the late 70s, early 80s. He also played all over the ABA and the NBA. He was the ABA's MVP. He was a 4-time NBA All-Star as well. He's one of the greatest players ever to play in the ABA. And Spencer Haywood also was a member of the Olympic team as well. He is a member inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. So we'll talk to Spencer about some basketball coming up here in about 20 minutes from now. The Atlanta Falcons made a change after dropping 0-5 as Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff were both fired by Arthur Blank. What is Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, now looking for in the next type of power couple to run the team? Maybe it's going to be two guys. Maybe it's going to be one guy, I suppose, if they gave the GM duty also to the head coach. Here was Blank.
Direction. It's called winning. What was that expression? Al Davis, you say, just win, baby, or something like that. Rest in peace. But, I think we need to win. I mean, and that's what our fans are, that's what they're counting on. That's what they're signed up for. We ask them for a lot, their resources, their commitment, their energy, their passion, their time.
Okay, so first off, God, it's kind of hard to mess up or not know just win, baby. I mean, I don't know how, especially as one of the 32 NFL owners, you would possibly get that wrong. I mean, it's like the easiest slogan and the most recognizable one in NFL history, just win, baby.
And it can't be, or something like that. No, it's right. Just win, baby. He's one of the most famous owners and you're an NFL owner. It's not, what is it, just win, baby or something like that?
Yeah, no, you got it right. It's definitely just win, baby. Number two, yesterday Arthur Blank was asked whether it was the 0-5 start that ended up making the decision. And Blank said, no, it's been a series of events. Essentially, we've been on a decline since winning the NFC and losing that big lead in the Super Bowl. And Arthur Blank, if that's the case, needed to make this decision and make this move earlier, because a lot has transpired, a lot of years have transpired in modern football time since that Super Bowl. Are you going to fire Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff after they go 11-5 and go all the way to the Super Bowl and have a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl over the Patriots? Of course not. You can't fire them after that game. They have proven to be good enough as a GM and head coach tandem to get you that far and to build that lead. But the following year, the Falcons sneak into the playoffs at 10-6 as a wild card, and they do end up winning a game, but then end up losing the following in the divisional round, I believe. And I think that was the game where the Falcons went to Los Angeles and beat the Rams in the wild card round. That was Sean McVay's first season, then lost in Philadelphia, if I'm not mistaken, in the divisional round. But it was not as dominant of a year as the year prior when they went to the Super Bowl. So they had gotten a little bit worse. And then they missed the playoffs and went 7-9. Okay, so now there's a very obvious trajectory. Super Bowl, then divisional round of the playoffs, then 7-9. Okay, well, if you are worried that you're getting worse in 2020, you should have been worried you were getting worse after the 2018 season. Brings back Dan Quinn, brings back Thomas Dimitroff. Dan Quinn last year begins the season 1-7. 1-7 does not get fired. Dan Quinn happens to go 6-2 the rest of the way to finish 7-9. They bring him back. And now they're 0-5. If your bit is, I need a large sample size and what I'm sick of is getting worse, you didn't need this season of Dan Quinn. And now you've punted on this season because 0-5, the season is over. It is over. Okay, Raheem Morris is going to turn this thing around, and then suddenly they go, you know, 10-6 and make the playoffs and get into the playoffs and make a run. That's not happening. This season is over at 0-5. So what you've ostensibly done is you've said, I am bothered because we haven't won at the level that we did in 2016, but you've avoided actually making the decision. The evidence was there. The decision was to be made. After 2018, he should have been fired, and certainly after 1-7, he should have been fired midseason and never been allowed to have a chance to win enough to keep his job to come into this year. So essentially, the Falcons wasted two full seasons. They wasted last year and this year. I respect wanting a long view, and I respect, my guess is, respecting Dan Quinn enough to say, we think with more time, he can turn it around. You know, there was many years where in New York, the media and fans wanted Tom Coughlin fired, and the Maras were very patient, and they wanted to believe in Coughlin, and ultimately they caught lightning in a bottle in 07. They went 10-6 and won a Super Bowl. Everyone wanted him fired in the middle years in between the next ring as well, and then they go 9-7. They were 7-7 at one point in the season, and then go on the run in 2011 and win again. Maybe that's what Arthur Blank was hoping for. But the difference was there was no peak like the Falcons had a peak for the Tom Coughlin era. You know, there was a peak, and clearly you're getting worse and worse, and your effectiveness is getting less and less. He wasted 2 years. He wasted 2 years in doing this. It makes it a great job because Arthur Blank has proven to have trust in his guys. Mike Smith was there a long time. Dan Quinn was there a long time. They probably both overstayed their welcome. Blank is going to be patient. But Arthur Blank should not have to settle here. The Falcons have a brand new stadium that's state-of-the-art and gorgeous. They have a town that cares about football when the Falcons give them something to care about. He's got facilities. He pays well. He is patient. They've got a franchise quarterback that might be 35 years old, but still they don't have to solve that right now. You don't go into the year hoping that Gardner Minshew pulls a rabbit out of the hat. You don't go into the year hoping Dwayne Haskins suddenly grows up. You know, you have a guy. And you've got good talent, certainly at the skill positions. It's a good job. He should not have to settle. He should have the best candidate on the market of the offseason, because I don't see another elite job opening up. You know, Belichick's not leaving. Tomlin's not leaving. Carroll's not leaving. Reed's not leaving. Sean Payton's not leaving. Those are the best jobs in football. I mean, maybe Mike McCarthy gets the zig, but I doubt it. I think he at least gets a year number two. That Falcons job is going to be the best job on the market this offseason. Harbaugh's not leaving Baltimore. That's going to be the best job. Don't settle. Don't go for a flyer. Be absolutely convinced of your guy. And I don't know who that guy is right now, because I don't know who's going to be available. What coaches end up wanting to come back into the fray? What assistant coaches end up getting hot late? You know, you never know. But Blank waited too long, but he should not have to settle on anything less than an A-plus type of candidate for that job. You know, Mraz, I don't know how Dan Quinn did it, because he was a defensive guy and he couldn't fix the defense. And he was had back-to-back non-playoff seasons and then started 0-5 this year. But isn't it weird to think back that the Seahawks defense was coordinated by Gus Bradley and Dan Quinn when they went to those Super Bowls, and both those guys ended up being total disasters?
Which, again, should give you alarms for any side of the ball and hot coordinator you want, because that is arguably the greatest defense we've seen in the last 15 years, and to be coordinated by those two guys and them have zero clue when it comes to head coaching a football team, it's just an utter nightmare, an utter joke, and it happens with offensive coordinators all the time. I mean, Vic Fangio right now, who knows what's happening with him in Denver. And really, we got to stop hiring head coaches because their defense was really good or their offense was really good, and start just looking at how they project at being a head coach. Because frankly, once they become a head coach, who cares how they necessarily run a defense? It's about operating the whole entire team. And I think the philosophy and how we choose coaching candidates has been completely off now.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because you have to get head coaches from somewhere. You can't always dig up the John Grudens the second time around or the Andy Reid that get fired in Philadelphia. You got to find Andy Reid if you're the Eagles before he becomes a head coaching guy. So you got to take some chances on coordinators and assistant coaches, but look at the assistant coaches right now that are winning and look the part. Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Kevin Stefanski are all guys, Matt LaFleur, that were coordinators or assistant coaches, but weren't necessarily hired because they had one great run of the playoffs, but were hired because everybody within the organizations that they worked in knew, that guy's a star. That guy's going to be a good head coach. That's a guy you want in charge of things. It wasn't like Sean McVay goes to the Super Bowl as an OC and then the Rams pluck him. No. He had this resume behind him in Washington and other places where people knew, no, this dude's the real deal. Matt LaFleur wasn't some type of hot shot coordinator. And neither was Kevin Stefanski. I mean, Stefanski was a coordinator, but it wasn't like everybody was tripping over him because he had lit up the league. So hot coordinators because they had one great run, very sketchy. But coordinators that everybody knows within internally, you know, that guy's got what it takes to be a head coach. Those are the guys that right now are working. Like Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel wasn't a defensive coordinator of, you know, the best defense in the league.
Yep.
But people knew that, you know, guys follow him. They like playing for him. He's accountable. He's responsible. He understands what leadership is all about. Those are the guys that are working right now. I'm trying to think of the hot coordinator that had one great run, but I mean, my guess is that you're a little bit worried about an Eric Bieniemy type.
Right. Well, look at Matt Nagy as an offensive coordinator.
Nagy's a good one, right.
Ben McAdoo, Pat Shurmur, because you found Case Keenum, you know, and getting him that coaching job. There are all of these guys who constantly, I think just the idea is, well, they were really successful and they did this with this unit, so I think they could do this with our unit as part of this team, and to get them here, we need to make them a head coach. And that kind of is a philosophy that I really, really, really think needs to go away. Doesn't mean they're not worthy of interviews, but I think when you get a guy in a room, you can kind of get a feel of who's a head coach and who's not, and just trying to grasp that he did this with the Seahawks defense, so he'll do that with our defense, and then he'll be able to run our team. Like, that's not a good way to hire a head coach.
I agree, and sometimes I wonder what these guys look at, and I wonder how they gauge personality traits, because I think it's pretty obvious. If you hear Kevin Stefanski talk or Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan's a little quirky and weird, but he has these incredible, his resume is incredible because of his dad and how quickly he was able to assimilate into coaching. It's pretty obvious who has things, who's organized and is a leader and is smart and just, you're like, I can trust that guy with this. I don't know how Freddie Kitchens gets hired. I don't know how Jim Tomsula gets hired. I don't know how Vic Fangio gets hired. I don't know, because I would never hire those guys. I would just never in an interview would I be like, no, that's the guy I want leading my franchise. Because they give off none of the personality traits of the guys that are working right now. Like you hear Mike Vrabel talk and it's just as a no-brainer. You're like, yeah, that guy's got it. You hear Mike Tomlin speak, even when he just got the job in Pittsburgh, you're like, no, okay, this makes total sense. And yes, there's a Pete Carroll every so often where as a young head coach, maybe he comes off a little weird, a little quirky, a little, you know, a little scattered, maybe a little hyperactive. But for the most part, the good head coach is just, you know it. You're like, yeah, that guy's organized. That guy's a leader. That guy can handle whatever I put on his plate. And then some guy could hire you. Go, I wouldn't trust him to run my bus. Like, I wouldn't trust him to run the short line. Like, I don't know why the guy would be the head coach. And Dan Quinn is one of those guys, right? Like, when you hear right. Dan Quinn talk, no, he has no idea. He doesn't know what's going on. He is maybe a nice guy, but I can't trust him to fix things if they get broken. And inevitably, in head coaching circles, things get broken. I mean, Belichick is a good example of don't go by a personality, because Belichick was crotchety and difficult, and even his players had a difficult time connecting to him, and clearly he's antisocial. He doesn't come off as a leader. All of those things are true. But for a decade, he was the best defensive mind in the NFL. So the evidence was obvious. He might be socially awkward. He might not be a natural-born leader, but I mean, the guy has now run the best defense or one of the best defenses of the NFL for a decade. He must know something. But I mean, by and large, the guys that are succeeding right now, they come off as really smart and really professional and really like ready for challenges. When we come back here on the show, let's talk about the NBA Finals, the crowning of the champion Los Angeles Lakers with a guy that won an NBA championship and is in the Basketball Hall of Fame, Spencer Haywood. Next, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Good value, big upside.
I do love the DA. I do.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
We thank you for being with us on a fine Tuesday around here. Hit us up on the phones at 855-212-4CBS or on Twitter, DA on CBS. The game plan for success sponsored by Napa. Take a look at the Astros. Their game plan for success. Bounce back down 0-2 in the ALCS. Focus on some defense. Jose Altuve's error leads to the big Margot home run. And maybe don't cheat. Whether you stop by a locally owned Napa Auto Parts store, Napa Auto Care, or visit Napa online, if you need help with your ride, you can count on Napa know-how. We just crowned an NBA champion. Happened to be the Los Angeles Lakers, of course. Now our next guest won a championship with the LA Lakers in the infancy of Showtime. This would be back in 1980. That was the amazing rookie season of Magic Johnson, which culminated in the NBA Finals. Now, our next guest was also a member of the 1968 Olympic team. He was an ABA MVP, one of the best big men of his era, and has an amazing story from his growing up until his NBA career and battles with addiction and an amazing, amazing story along the way. The Spencer Haywood Rule battles basketball and the making of an American iconoclast. Joining us here on the show is Spencer Haywood. Spencer, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you? Good.
I'm all right.
You forgot one. I went to the Supreme Court that changed that rule to the Spencer Haywood Rule.
It's exactly
before
right.
I came along, you had to wait for 4 years before you could go into the NBA. But go
what,
ahead.
Yeah, what was it that you felt confident about at that age challenging it in the Supreme Court? That is such a young age to be fighting for something so dramatic.
Yeah, well, you know, it was, I was in a situation, But also, my mom was still picking cotton in Silver City, Mississippi, and I wanted to get her out of the cotton field. So I challenged the NBA with their then four-year rule, which meant that you had to wait for 4 years before you could enter, 4 years after high school before you could enter into the NBA. And I thought it was unfair because I went to the ABA, I was the MVP over there, and so the following year I had one more year left, and I wanted to play. And so I found a great owner in Sam Schulman who said to me, "Son, I'm going to teach you about Jewish loyalty." And in doing so, he financed the whole legal aspect of the case. And I tried to get out and play. And once I got out on the floor, they said, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have an illegal player on the floor." And they served me with an injunction, a 10-game injunction. And so I waited and waited and waited to get back into the game or get back on the floor. And then I had a 10-game injunction to play. And during that time, you know, I had to face a lot of adversity because players who were the original players that were on the floor, they had been told by the owners that this guy is going to interfere and mess up everything for the old heads, which is the veterans, and bring in all these young guys into the league, and it's going to be just turmoil. So that they didn't support me. And so the case went on and on, and then we got to Cincinnati, and with Cincinnati, we were playing the Cincinnati Royals and Oscar Robertson and those great players, and then they escorted me off the floor and into the snow. I stayed out there in the snow and froze my butt off, and then later on, around March, is when the case had made its way through all the court system, all the way to the Supreme Court. And that's when they ruled in my favor 7-2 that you cannot stop a person from making a living. And sure, I feel so great because, you know, Thurgood Marshall, all of the great justice was there, and they ruled on my case. And I just felt so, so grateful because prior to me and at the same time, Kurt Flood was there. And he did not win his case at that time. He won it later on with the Andy Musselsmith label put on it. But I was there with the greats, Kurt Flood, Muhammad Ali, and myself. So amazing. We were the revolutionaries back there in those days. And I was 20 years old.
I mean, imagine all of that at 20. I'm just amazing. Spencer Haywood is our guest this morning on the show. And an amazing life that you led. And then, you know, you hit the ABA, you're a dominant player, you get to the NBA as well, you're winning an NBA championship with the Showtime Lakers before they're quite Showtime, but of course, you're in the middle of this.
It was Showtime.
The glitz and glamour of Los Angeles as well, but you also fall on hard times, addiction to cocaine, addiction to alcohol as well. So in the middle of all this, you're going through your own turmoil. How difficult did it get when you were in the throes of addiction?
Well, in the throes of addiction, let me just tell you, when I came to the Lakers, I came in from New Orleans. I had just been traded from the Knicks in the half season, and I went to New Orleans, and I started playing my style of the game, and I averaged 24-12. Then I got to the Lakers with Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Norm Nixon, Jamal Wilkes, Michael Cooper, just to some name a few, Jim Jones, all of those great players. And so I get there and I go out to one of those, you know, a Hollywood party. I kind of knew what I was doing, but I was in denial of it. And I started smoking cocaine. And once I started smoking cocaine, I watched my game go down by mid-season to, you know, like 10 points and maybe 7 rebounds, and by the end of the season, it was down to 7 points and 5 rebounds, and I was 15 pounds lighter, and it wasn't on me. It was Magic. You know, he was putting the passes in my hand. I would drop. I mean, we're talking the denial factor. So he put the ball right in my hand in a pass, and I couldn't hold on because I lost my hands during this addiction. And I was like, "You should have put it a little bit higher," and it was right on my chest. So I went through all of that, and it was just a horrible time. It was it was not until I decided to get help, like later, and when I seeked out help, I found out that, you know, we were in denial. I had four sisters who had died of alcoholism, four sisters and brothers who have died of alcoholism, and yet I thought it wasn't going to get me because I was doing something else. I wasn't doing alcohol. I was doing a cocaine, and I wasn't an alcoholic. I was more into the drug scene, you know. And so once I got my life straight and got everything straight, and with the help of two wives, my first wife, Iman, who lives there in New York and does very well, the fashion model, who first hooked me up with a psychiatrist to talk about what kind of PTSD that I was having, because I didn't know what PTSD was. And so, and my wife, Linda, that I'm currently married to, so we finally got a balance of what I need to do and how I need to behave. And lo and behold, in the whole process of this, in my sobriety, this has been my 30th year, I have a young daughter that works in New York that teaches at the university there. I think it's Pace University. And she is a psychologist. And I have, you know, so I'm just grateful.
That's amazing.
For all of these things. And so I talk a lot about that in the book. I talk about the case. I talk about my love affair with my first wife, Iman. I talk about my life born into indentured slavery in Silver City, Mississippi, where, you know, you have no choice but to pick cotton from sun up to sun down. But I paired it in a way was not slavery. I paired it in a way that it was building me into a basketball player, because you pick cotton from two rows of cotton and you get hand and eye coordination. You're dragging a sack, you build up your body and your legs. So I was, you know, built and matured body wise way beyond my age. So when I got to the Olympics at age 18, everybody was like, he's got to be a fake. He's not 18. And then I turned 19 down there and we won the gold medal, and it was just a tremendous life. And at that time, you know, we had Martin Luther King, Jackie Robinson, Harry Edwards, all of the people who were there for, and Jesse Owens for the human rights program, and with John Carlos and Thomas Smith, the gentleman who put up the black glove at the 68 Olympics. George Foreman was there. We were trying to eat him out of a home. You know, we was like two young 19-year-olds. We were like, we're going to eat all of this food. We're going to tear this food up. They shouldn't have invited us to the Olympics.
Just an amazing story. I'd like to know what you thought
I'll
about.
I'll tell you one more thing, what happened, yes, you sir. Know. We were like just running our mouths, you know, like young guys, to all of us at the Olympics. So we were like in this big meeting, we were running our mouth. And so Jesse Owens came in, and Jesse was talking about, you know, how you got to be this good old American, you got to do the right turn. Looked at us and said, hey, any of you SOBs would have been able to run before Hitler? And that's when we are like, okay, you dropped the gauntlet on us. Okay, cool, Jesse. Cool.
That's the ultimate gauntlet, isn't it?
Yeah. We're here to win the gold medal. We have no problem. Sir, you are the greatest.
Yeah, that's the drop the mic moment, when you can say, I defeated Hitler in the 36 Olympics. Yeah, that's the ultimate Olympic story. Yeah, I'd say. I mean, the book is incredible. It's called The Spencer Haywood Rule, Battling Basketball and the Making of an American Iconoclast and Forcing the Hand of the Supreme Court and the NBA as well. So just a really cool book done by very talented basketball writers. I know Mark Spears and Gary Washburn both very well. And those guys are so good at what they do. So really excited to see the book out. They're such good basketball guys. So really cool. Spencer, this was so much fun to chat. Thanks so much, and best of luck with the book.
Okay, go Knicks.
All right, Spencer Haywood.
Bye.
All right, joining us this morning on the show. That had it all. I mean, I wanted to ask him a little bit about the NBA Finals, but I mean, when he's telling you about his wife, to his marriage with Iman, and, you know, drug addiction, and going to the Olympics and talking to Jesse Owens, I just got to let him do that. Got to let him go. Pretty awesome. AB, Andrew Bogish has our headlines this morning. Mr. Bogues, good morning.
DA, good morning again. So while Dodgers righty Walker Buehler was pitching in Game 1 of the NLCS last night, Walker Buehler's pants was trending on Twitter because those pants were tight and short. Not full-on capri pants, but they didn't even reach the top of his high-top cleats. Michael Duarte of NBC LA had the onions to ask Buehler about that after a 5-1 loss to the Braves.
Walker Buehler's pants were trending on Twitter tonight.
Probably not the time or place, Michael. Thank you, Walker.
That's Buehler cutting him off, and then the PR guy saying, okay, Walker, you can go now. Buehler allowed only one run over five. Despite five walks, the bullpen took the loss when Atlanta scored four in the ninth off Blake Trinan and Jake McGee. Austin Riley starting that rally with a solo blast. The Braves winning 5-1. They are now 6-0 this postseason. The Rays are 2-for-2 in the ALCS, 4-2 winners over the Astros in San Diego yesterday. Their Game 3 is today's nightcap, 8:40 Eastern first pitch. The Braves and Dodgers play Game 2 at 6. Padres outfielder Tommy Pham is recovering from a stabbing Sunday night in San Diego. Pham reportedly needed a minor procedure to address a minor wound in his back. He was apparently leaving a gentleman's club Sunday night when he came upon two strangers arguing near his car. He asked them to move and then got attacked. Justin Herbert grew up a Chargers fan, so he should know the deal, but just in case he doesn't, the team giving him a crash course in being a Charger. Two straight weeks, blowing 17-point leads, a four-game losing streak overall.
We got off to a quick start and just have to play consistently all four quarters. And we unfortunately didn't do that.
His team led last night in New Orleans 23-27-20 thanks to four TD passes from Herbert. After the Saints caught up in the final moment, Herbert then set up Michael Badgley for a 50-yard winning field goal, but he clanged the right upright, so LA lost in OT 30-27. The Saints win their second straight despite a double-digit hole in
both. Can I just go back to Walker Buehler's pants for a second here, guys?
Please.
So I'm a huge fan of stirrups. I love the old school look in baseball. And I also think that even after stirrups, but when pants were still tight on baseball players, was a good look. And when the jerseys were tight as well, I thought that once we got to the Manny Ramirez, everything is baggy and your pants are like dragging behind your cleats, it looked silly, like one of the seven dwarfs. So the fact that Walker Buehler went back to a really tight pair of baseball pants would seem on the surface to be a cool throwback. And yet I was watching it last night and then looking at it again on Twitter today, and they weren't cool. What is it missing that the old uniforms used to have? Why does it look weird?
Because it looks like he's wearing high top cleats and no socks. And then I see skin and the bottom of his pants. It looks like he should be walking through Williamsburg, Brooklyn, with the rest of the hipsters.
Right.
Not pitching a baseball
So
game.
If he has stirrups on, it's fine that those pants are really tight, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, just from a personal standpoint, that looks too tight to be comfortable to pitch in. But
you know what I'm saying, Bogues? Like, we love the 86 Mets. I mean, those guys had their jerseys painted on. Those pants are skin tight, and they're like that weird acrylic 1980s nylon. Isn't it weird that back then it doesn't look uncomfortable, but today it looks really uncomfortable?
I mean, maybe we're not used to it anymore, but it does look uncomfortable going back into time as well. But then again, they had the sanitary hose and the stirrup, so at least there was no skin. Buehler showing like lower calf muscle seemed odd for a baseball game last night.
It's like somebody who wears like shorts down just below their knee and then are wearing Timberland boots in the summer and they walk past, and it's like that Progressive commercial. Don't say anything. Don't say anything. Don't say anything.
If he's got high socks on, he's fine here.
I think so. High socks, and I would be honest, I wouldn't go with the high top cleats though either. You know what I mean? Like if you can get kind of a mid-range cleat, sock stirrup with
guess
those
that's
pants,
true.
Nobody's
I guess
questioning the pants.
If it's a low-cut cleat under the ankle and there's no skin showing, it's probably fine that he has tight pants on.
Yes.
It's just the fact that once you get down to where your eye is drawn to his like lower calf ankle area, it looks really awkward. It looks really, really bizarre. Like, yeah, he should be hanging out sipping a latte in Portland.
But he still got dressed. I don't understand why that question's out of bounds and he can't laugh about it after the game.
Well, I mean, they just lost the NLCS. Do you really want to be talking about your tight pants?
They lost game one, and you went out there looking like that. As far as I'm concerned, any question when you've put on those clothes is fair game. It's not like it's atrocious to ask that. You wore that looking for somebody to talk about the way you looked. Just like with DA, when we used to be able to see him in person, remember those days? And he used to wear those jeans with his big fat ass all tight in them like that?
What a shot.
Wow.
Remember yesterday when you said you were going to be a nicer, more supportive Mraz?
Positive.
I always complimented those jeans and thought your bottom looked very plump and nice in those. So what are you talking about? That's a compliment.
It didn't
sound saying that
like
I have
it.
A fat ass?
Oh, hold on here. DA could call me a fat ass only once. I compliment his fat ass in a complimentary way, and now I'm the enemy.
I'm just saying you do not sound like a more supportive, kinder Mraz. That's what I'm saying.
All right. Well, that was very supportive. You know I like those jeans, and I like the way you looked at them.
You're on some type of weird emotional roller coaster. Are you on some type of pharmaceutical?
Are you still drunk from Sunday?
No, yeah, I did take Benadryl last night in the fourth quarter. That was it. That was it because my throat was still scratchy.
You're on this wild up and down these last 2 days.
I'm very happy, guys. You look beautiful in those pants, DA. I hope I can see you in them soon.
He meant fat with a PH. That,
right.
That was the fat he meant. Yeah.
Okay, but you see how you took fat ass as a bad word? That's what I talk about all the time. When you use the F word, it sounds harsher, right? I meant it complimentary. Now you know how you sound.
Well, yeah, I never use the term fat ass as a compliment. I mean, I know what I'm doing.
All right.
That it sounds really mean.
All right, well, then we learned our lesson.
Sean, you're fat. That's a compliment.
Duh, Pete. You know what? You look
I'll just
lovely.
Read sports news for a second. There's no new positive this morning in Tennessee, so the Titans are good to go to host the Bills tonight. Kickoff is 7 Eastern on CBS TV. And fired Sixers head coach Brett Brown has withdrawn as the head coach of Australia's national team. The Olympics obviously were supposed to be this past summer, pushed to next summer. Now without a job, that uncertainty has Brown backing out of his commitment. And now we are stuck.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
For those of you not on watchda.com, or at least on our Zoom, we just saw Sean's Kate Winslet's So Are All Men Again this morning. Thanks to Sean. Guys, we have lost too many sporting events, big and small, to coronavirus, but we are getting one of them back. The annual mullet toss. Mullet toss has been rescheduled for October 23rd through the 25th after originally being put on hold by the virus. However, we are not talking about throwing hairdos with this mullet toss. This is mullet fish, mostly used as bait, but apparently pretty tasty too. The dead mullets are tossed each year at the Florabama Lounge, a bar on the Florida-Alabama border. Contestants stand in the Sunshine State and hurl the fish into Bama. The longest toss wins. Now, they can do this because Florida has relaxed its COVID restrictions. Masks are not mandatory, but they will be available for those who want them later this month at the annual mullet toss.
So, where are they getting all the dead mullet? And are people getting to throw the same mullet, or do you get your own fish? Because then you'd have to have a lot of dead fish on hand, because I've seen video of this, and there's a lot of people that partake.
I mean, that's a good question. It's one I didn't ask because I didn't feel like wasting the brain power on the mullet toss. But it's a good question because you're right. If I'm throwing 5 pounds and you're throwing 8, you've got to factor in the difference in the weight to the distance in our throw. So they've got to be some kind of uniform mullet fish here, or it's an unfair competition.
Unless it's like boxing where there's stronger people throwing the heavier fish and lighter people. And you have a welterweight title and a big title. Heavyweight.
Okay. Yeah, okay, maybe that's true. And it's funny, too, because this is a little misleading. knowing that it's at the Florabama Lounge, and I've seen the people on this video, you would think that it has something to do with their haircuts. But in fact, it has nothing to do with their haircuts. Maybe that's the ironic part of it, that they chose the mullet fish because it's a bunch of rednecks throwing fish on a beach. But it's actually named after the fish, not the haircut. Let me ask you, do you guys have a favorite mullet haircut synonym? What's your favorite phrase for the mullet haircut?
I just call it the Joe Dirt. That's always the way I go by it.
Okay. I've got a list of them. Camaro hair. Ooh. Hockey hair. The achy, breaky, big mistakey. The Tennessee top hat.
Ooh, I like that one.
The Camaro crash helmet. The Wisconsin waterfall. The Ooh. Canadian passport. I like the 1090, 10% in the front, 90% in the back.
Okay.
I also have always enjoyed the Missouri Compromise.
I learned about that in school.
It's like a compromise between, you know, business in front, party in the back. This is, and very big in Missouri. You can call it the Alabama Shag, the Mississippi Mud Flap, the Tennessee Tail, or the Sholo, short in the front, long in the back. Also, some will call it the North Carolina Neck Warmer. When we come back, we've got your advanced analytics and your epic fail. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
We had the young man that beat Mraz out for senior superlatives in high school 15 years ago for most likely to host a talk show. Here's how it went. We have Justin Stroker. Justin, good morning. How you doing?
The home run stroker.
Good morning, DA. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
You were built for this. You were built to be a personality on the radio. So how important was that senior superlative when you won it 15 years ago?
I wish I could take that bait, but honestly, I'd forgotten about it until Mraz had reached out to me last week.
Huh. So it meant nothing to you.
Yeah, it really meant nothing to me.
How do you like that?
I mean, it's so distant in the past. I was part of the, I guess it's the AV club. It was just something I was doing for fun, not anything I was doing really as a resume builder.
The home run stroker.
Most likely to host a talk show, West Babylon High School 2005. Justin Stroker joins us this morning here on the show. What do you remember from Mraz in high school? Was he a charismatic fellow?
Charisma is a good word for it, I think. We ran in different circles. I didn't know really much about him. We played a couple of, pickup football games on the holidays together. Other than that, I just remember he was a sports guy. He was always in some sort of jersey, like every day, jersey and sweats every single day.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
And he was a nice enough guy. Wouldn't give me free sandwiches at Subway, but that's understandable.
Now, do you remember his male pattern baldness back then? He told us that he was nearly bald entirely by senior year of high school.
Yeah, I didn't want to bring that up, but since you're asking, yeah, it was a definitive characteristic for him.
The home run stroker.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Also, we have your advanced analytics today. Were your high school senior superlatives shockingly accurate or way off the mark? 70% said way off the mark. Nearly one-third of those named most likely to succeed in high school regarded as a, quote, curse, according to a recent poll. At memorylane.com. Imagine being named most likely to succeed and considering it a curse here, guys. Do you remember who won it for you there, Mraz?
Yes, the one who went to Harvard who became a cashier at Stop and Shop.
Oh, yes. Dear. By the way, our toll-free line today was sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. Keep you up at night, switch to Geico, and save.
Oh,
Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer of The DA Show. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. And thanks to Andrew Bogish, anchoring your headlines today. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership Disconnect.
4
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.